I'm Angela Rippon, and you're listening to Siren Radio on 107.3 FM.
Marvellous. That's what we like to see. Good afternoon, Malcolm Tomlinson. How are you?
I'm extremely well, Alex, and really pleased to be back.
Always good to have you back, Malcolm. We've got some very exciting news about your daughter, Eleanor, which we'll be revealing as the show proceeds, of course. Mm-hmm. And we also welcome back for his second consecutive week, Jack Harrison. How are you, Jack?
Good afternoon. Very well, thank you.
Marvellous. Jack, of course, the founder of the American Society in Lincoln, which is great stuff. Now, I start off with a question, really, to open up, a rhetorical question in so many ways. Who is Joe Hunter? Well, for a start, there are certain things he isn't. He's not a cop. He's not a bounty hunter. He's not a private detective. Some people call him a vigilante. But even Joe will tell you that vigilantes take the law into their own hands, whereas there aren't too many laws that define what Joe does to get a job done. Joe is someone who cares. Somebody who actually cares about Joe, because he created him, is the ace author, Matt Hilton. Are you there, Matt?
I am here. Good afternoon to you.
Wonderful stuff. Now, Matt, I believe you're communicating with us from the joys of Carlisle, is that right?
Yeah, I'm further out west on the coast. I'm actually from Carlisle, but I'm living in Abbeytown, nearer to the Port of Silloth.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all sorted through there. These days it's all defined, of course, by where the BBC Radio 1 big weekend is actually taking place.
Well, of course it is. I'm the only one that isn't there, I think.
Yeah, okay. I thought you'd be actually starring in... I could see you on stage with the Black Eyed Peas, Matt. You know, I thought that would be a line forward.
Yeah, you haven't seen my dancing yet.
Well, I have to say, Slash and Burn, the Joe Hunter novel that we put together, it was one of our sister station, Southside Broadcasting's Book of the Month, and of course you'll be taking part in the Middlesbrough Literary Festival in the near future.
Right.
It was a cracking read. I mean, it sort of he went ahead at pace. I was reminded very much of a kind of boy's own adventure with a bit of swearing and a bit of gruesome graphic descriptions of violence.
Yes, I think you've kind of summed it up quite nicely there. Genuinely, I was aiming for that kind of pace and plotting in books, you see.
Yep.
So I was trying to go back to my reading when I was growing up in the 1970s.
Yep.
On the go on then, yeah.
So lots of Patrick Moore, lots of Target, various other things, pointing about the professionals. I could see a sort of sense of Bodie and Doyle and company coming across from that. And even, I thought, a smidgen with Joe's friends of Magnum P.I. I just got a flavour of Magnum P.I. coming across as well, really, with T.C. and Rick being the faithful associates, really.
That's right. With Rinky, actually, Joe sometimes... pokes fun at his friend Rinke, calling him Magnum P.I. wannabe,
It's great, cracking stuff from that point of view. Malcolm, questions for Matt.
Hello, Matt.
Hello there.
Now, I understand you're a former police constable, is that right?
That's right, yeah, in Cumbria, yeah.
And so, how many years were you in the police force, Matt?
I was actually in the police force for 4 years, but prior to that I was in private security for 18 years, so pretty much all my adult life's been involved in law enforcement in one way or another.
Right, so I suppose the obvious question to ask you is...
Don't mess with Matt.
apart from the statement, I mean, the question has got to be how much did you draw on your experiences as a security officer and a policeman when you were writing these novels?
Yeah, it's a good question, because people, because I was a police officer, they assume that I'm going to be writing British crime procedurals, but to be honest, my style of writing's more akin to the American action thriller.
Right.
What I didn't want to do was write about the day job, to be honest, because I was penning the first books in the series when I was still a police officer, and I didn't want to write, you know, from the perspective of a uniformed constable in the UK. I wanted to get outside of that, which was why I chose a special forces soldier as my main protagonist, and I sent him off to America,
yeah.
You know, so I could let the, you know, my imagination fly. And the way I do use it, though, is in, obviously, over the years, you know, 20-plus years of dealing with, dare I say, but criminal-minded people, you know, I kind of got an idea of the way people's minds work and what people are capable of. And I actually use the ideas. I've been in quite a number of conflicting situations as well, so I'm able to bring that to the table and add kind of a realism of the emotion and the, you know, the tension, the way it actually affects people caught in violent situations. I'm able to bring that to the table. But I would say that although my books sound violent in some respects, I try to go more for a Hollywood style of violence. You know, it's a real fight is a lot of noise, a lot of grunting and rolling around on the floor, dirty and horrible. And you know, the violence in the books is kind of Hollywood-esque in that it's, you know, it's a big
So
big scene.
Would people sort of realise it's pretend or not, Matt? I mean, was that the idea?
Idea is to give it enough gritty realism that it appeals to people who are familiar with the genre. But I also didn't want to glorify violence. I know that sounds crazy coming from an action thriller author, but I want to show it as being the horrible, nasty thing that it is, really.
Right.
So the violence is there for a reason, not just for... It's not gratuitous in the respect that, right, we need a fight on every other page.
No.
It's there for the reason of these are the bad people that Joe's going up against. Joe's sometimes, a little bit uncompromising in the way he deals with people, but it's just his kind of background as a soldier that he brings to the table, and his way of kind of settling his mind with that is that these people are doing worse things, and it's down to him to stand up for people who can't do it for themselves. So it's moralistic in some respect, and standing up against bullying and being kind of upright and stand up for people weaker than yourself.
He sounds like the sort of guy that we'd all like to be, Matt. Is that the idea?
It's kind of... I think it's my moral outlook in some respects, I have to say. Not that I've ever went out and, taken on any villains in that manner or anything.
But you are a martial arts expert, aren't you?
I am a martial arts expert. I've been trained in jiu-jitsu and kempo, mixed martial arts and boxing. I've done it pretty much all my life, but I've always looked at the martial art, and it sounds cliched, this, so I didn't have to be violent, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You have a lot more control over your reactions and your own kind of emotion in conflict, and you're able to, rein yourself in that respect, whereas, if you let yourself be taken over by fear and emotion, that's when violence erupts. And
no use to anybody. No use to anybody on that basis, it has to be said.
No.
Matt, I was thinking in terms of movie roles, because, clearly we're looking towards that. Daniel Craig will make quite a good Joe Hunter. Anybody that you have in mind from that point of view?
It'd be superb, and if he's listening in, he can make contact.
Well, I'm thinking, and I'm also thinking his female lead, Eleanor Tomlinson. Go on, share the news, Malcolm. Your daughter, Eleanor Tomlinson, currently lead role in...
Well, Jack the Giant Killer is the movie that she's making at the moment. It's going to be out in April, May, June next year, Matt. And it's a big Hollywood blockbuster, and she's playing opposite Nick Holt from Skins, and Bill Nighy is in it playing a baddie. And Ewan McGregor goes to rescue her, and Stanley Tucci's in it.
I'm thinking, could be ideal for Slash and Burn. The only sort of gripe I actually had, Matt, about Slash and Burn was the female lead. And now I know that Joe Hunter's divorced, and he keeps looking back over his life and going through those angst and agony moments, etc. But then you kill off his one chance at romance. She's done in. I mean, I'm sorry if I'm spoiling the plot for this particular area, but what's he done? No!
What's happened here? I'll tell you a little story about that one. I actually didn't kill her off in the original draft, but there's this kind of feeling in writing where a lot of, believe it or not, but a lot of my readers are female. Uh-huh. And female readers tend to like to think of the hero as being unattached.
Hence the appeal of Simon Temple, James Bond, and Mr. Spock, of course.
Exactly, so the move on. So I was actually asked to kill off that character, which kind of caused problems because I'd already written her into the next
game. Exactly. I could see a feisty lass, a twin sister, all kind of connections there, sisters and all sorts of things.
Yeah. You'll be pleased to hear that, in the follow-up books, there's actually another two on the shelf since Slash and Burn. Mm. There's Cut and Run, and then Blood and Ashes are also out now since that one in the series. And Joe does get a bit of a love life, you'll be pleased to hear.
Exactly.
But part of the fact that...
He's not a monk, after all.
Part of the fact that Kate also died was to give him another level to him as a character, because, writing a series... Particularly like an action thriller series, you're going more for the plot, you're going more for the pace than you are the characterization. You build characterization through each book. So you're kind of spoon feeding bits of character into it. And I just felt, I couldn't just have him as like a remorseless killing machine going from book to book. And
Minor point before we actually hand over to Jack Harrison for some other questions, but I did feel at times the descriptions of the guns and his guns being tucked into his trousers, there was a lot of symbolism there, you know, a lot of symbolism. You know, a man with his gun in his trousers. Yeah, yeah. I shall say no more.
It wasn't on the back of his trousers. So
it's even more confusing.
Yeah.
Jack.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We've kind of touched on it already, but I was just going to ask you if there's a sort of an American Western influence on what you do, because sort of most of what I read was basically just a cowboy. That's what this character is, and it's taken to another.
He's a cowboy, but you don't want to mess with this cowboy.
I'll take that as a huge compliment, actually, because I was rewriting the Western for the modern era.
Yeah.
I think if you look at a lot of crime books, really, you could say that a lot of them are, you know, a good guy goes after bad guy, and it's the same, it's that kind of story that goes on down through the ages. Back when I was, I touched on it earlier, when I was, you know, some of my influences were from the 1970s, when I was a young lad and I was reading things like Mac Bolan's Executioner, and a series called Edge, which was a, it was kind of like an action Western series, written by George G. Gilman. So they were my influences back then. So when I, you know, set off to write these books, I guess that kind of impeded on me. And I am writing a modern Western, or a modern fantasy story, if you want. So
yeah, definitely. So what you said about uncompromising, and the way you show the violence as well as sort of Hollywood violence, I think that's very much sort of the Western theme.
It is, you know, how they used to go through a gun battle and come out and they just had a trickle of blood from the corner of the mouth, you know. In reality, you know, I mean, if you took it right to bare bones, you know, nobody's superhuman, and, you know, they wouldn't last, you know, more than 5 minutes in these kind of situations. However, it's fiction that I'm writing, and I'm writing for the for the thrill. It's like you get, you know, the action movie, you know, Bruce Willis in a vest. We don't believe it, but we suspend disbelief long enough to enjoy it.
He'd never wear a vest, he'd wear a t-shirt. That's the key thing.
So that's the kind of what I'm aiming for.
Definitely. So if we can find the next Clint Eastwood, then he can play the lead role in the movie.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood was, you know, 40 years younger, it'd be spot on,
I still think sort of Daniel Craig could probably actually do a of course Malcolm Tomlins. I mean, you could do your action.
Well,
I mean, you know,
a little bit old now. Actually.
Oh, I don't know. You know,
slips serenely into middle age now. You know.
Everything's relative. Look at Roger Moore in From a View to a Kill. And again, perhaps not. But there's a different line on that basis. Matt, we talked about obviously the fact that you're going to be attending the Middlesbrough Literary Festival, part of a crime package from that point of view. Are you looking forward to that? Have you visited Middlesbrough before? Is it a place you think, no, I'm from Carlisle, why would I go across the East Coast? What's going on here?
I have been to Middlesbrough two or three times now. I was in part of the Middlesbrough Festival last year, and I was also over there back end of last year, I think it was with Sheila Quigley, and we'd done an event at the library, so I'm familiar with the town.
Marvellous. Well, of course, you know, I can't believe we haven't signed you up for the Lincoln Book Festival, or indeed World's Words later on in the year, but I'm sure we'll already put the word out and spread that so that you can bring your magic to Lincoln as well from that perspective.
Yeah, we'll travel. There's another Western.
Fantastic. And have you ever had any sort of thoughts of going back to the police area to actually sort of say, actually, I think I'm going to go back to my work in the police department?
No. No. When I was... My ambition all my life has been to be an author. That was always my dream. And, I went into security and then I went into the police force. But it wasn't actually my vocation in life. Mm. Writing was my vocation. So now that I'm able to actually, you know, make a living from it and, you know, concentrate on my actual career as a author, you know, that's me living the dream, to be honest. So
and obviously we talked about disciplines and your martial arts disciplines and so on. Is it a similar discipline you apply to your writing? I mean, do you get up in the morning and say, right, I'm going to do 3,000 words and then that's it, and or I'm going to do 3,000 words whatever?
Yeah, I'm one of these people who I write constantly. If I'm not writing, I'm reading, to be honest. So when I get up on a morning, I get stuck into the work. It's not unusual for me still to be at the computer at 11 o'clock at night, and I tend to do something every day.
Is it true you started writing when you were 13, Matt?
Yeah, probably younger than that. I wrote the first novel at 13. It was a kind of coming of age, teenage book at the time. You know, that was my first completed novel. Wrote another 7 complete novels between then and when I was first published with Dead Man's Dust.
See, that's the kind of thing that can make people feel inadequate, you know, if there's something in the writing. So this guy obviously wrote his novel at 13, he's written another 7. Unbelievable, really. It's great stuff. The other thing that was commented on when we did the review, obviously, of Slash and Burn, was it had lots of layers, very much like a video role-playing game. Is that something which you also were channeling to in terms of that? Do you see that? Or was that something which just sort of, it's just the perspective of the reader?
It is perspective of the reader, but I actually listened to that and I thought, you know, I'm keen on getting like young people reading, and you know we've got a lot of new young readers with likes of Harry Potter and things like that. But lads and you know they tend to be going into the role play games and the you know the shoot 'em ups, things like Call of Duty. Mm. And if my books can draw people from that that subculture into reading, I'd be over the moon, to be honest.
Matt, I'm pleased you see an author who actually listens to the shows that we produce on a monthly basis. Fantastic stuff, you know. And you can do it too, dear listener. You know, you just go to the Midweek Drive page and then pick up our sort of interviews, etc. Click on the Book of the Month thing, and woof, there it goes, as if by magic. You can download and listen to all these kind of things. Matt, it's been wonderful just shooting the breeze, to use an Americanism, which I'm prone to do in almost a cliched, ridden way today with your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on the Midweek Drive on Siren FM?
I have thoroughly enjoyed myself. I hope I haven't just been laughing all the way through. So.
I think it's been a look. Life is a tragedy to those who feel, a comedy to those who think. Or that's to paraphrase true. Those kind of things. A reminder, of course, matthiltonbooks.com to find out more magical details about life, the universe, Joe Hunter, and other things. Matt, can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again in the very near future?
You most certainly can, any time. I'd be happy to come back.
Brilliant, Matt Hilton. I think we salute you, don't we, chaps? You
know, we do indeed.
It's very test
of saluting.
Heavy, isn't
we're saluting
it,
in this studio.
We are indeed all sorted through. Pretty if the song